Our final case of the day is United States against Paul.
Good afternoon. May it please the court.
Mr. Paul.
Oh, sorry.
You will be called. Mr. Paul.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The district court abused its discretion when it ordered 60 drug tests per year as part of Mr. Paul's supervised release, even though there's no evidence of Mr. Paul ever using drugs in the first place.
Just let me ask you this. In view of the statutory presumption in favor of drug testing, in what sense could Judge Crabb's imposition of the testing requirement be characterized as error? She wasn't asked to suspend the requirement, was she?
Yes, she was. At the end of sentencing hearing, Your Honor, there were a number of issues to be raised. One of them was a question about the drug testing. Mr. Paul, we raised the issue and considered whether or not drug testing was appropriate when something like breathalyzers or something that tested for alcohol, which there's a history with Mr. Paul, would be more appropriate. Judge Crabb then said that, well, if Mr. Paul tests clean for a while, he can be phased out.
And then, I don't know whether it was you, but counsel for Mr. Paul says, okay, then that's all I have, right, Your Honor, which I think the district court and certainly the government seem to take as acquiescence. It's not like we're preserving that objection for appeal or something. It's just, okay, then that's all I have.
No, and you're right, Your Honor, and it was me, and perhaps I should have been clear, but I can tell you in the tenor of the conversation, it was raised as we didn't think this was appropriate. She said, well, then we, you know, and we thought that alcohol testing would be more appropriate. She said, well, alcohol is a drug, and we're gonna phase it out. And I took that as her ruling and said, okay.
So we should construe this, in your view, as simply acquiescence to her ruling and take this on an abuse of discretion basis as opposed to a waiver basis.
Correct. I don't believe that evinces a desire, Mr. Paul, to waive the issue.
Well, why isn't it? I mean, to take a somewhat different approach, given the fact, as Judge Crabb reminds everybody, that this 60 number can be revisited after a certain period of time, why isn't that enough to show that it's not an abuse of discretion? Addictive behaviors sometimes spill over from one kind of substance to another, and maybe Mr. Paul had a problem with alcohol. He could have other issues. Who knows? She's following a general norm here.
No, and that's true, but everything about this case belies that norm. You know,
He's not such a saint. I mean, this guy was, you know, fleeing the police and on probation.
Well, I'm not saying, everything in his past is entirely alcohol-related.
Yeah.
And if we want to talk about the need to protect the public, you know, put a breathalyzer in his house. You know, every time he comes in and out, you know, probation can establish a breathalyzer where he's got to blow to make sure that he's not drinking. But there is no drug problem here. And to impose 60 tests a year.
Is this money? I mean, what's the problem?
Yeah, you'd think the person aggrieved by an excessive number of drug tests is the government, which has to conduct them and pay for them.
Right. Well, there's also, you know, a bit of
the government hasn't filed a cross appeal saying we don't want to pay for 60 tests.
No, I mean, and there's a privacy concern. 60 times a year, Mr. Paul is going to have to come and stand in a bathroom with a probation officer right next to him and submit a sample. I mean,
well, that's because people abuse these procedures, or so I'm led to understand.
But again, there are conditions of supervised release that could address the alcohol concern. This was not one. Drug testing, it does nothing. And especially 60 times a year seems to me an exorbitant number of tests for somebody without a history. And there was no indication by the court whether five tests would be enough to stop the condition or if it was a year.
She's probably saving his life.
Right. Well, again, I think the proper condition would be some sort of alcohol testing, and that can be done, and that's probably what should have been done. The test here doesn't do that. It doesn't protect the public, it doesn't protect Mr. Paul, and it's not related to the case. I have nothing further this time.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Johnson, did the government ask for 60 tests, or did the judge just come up with that number on her own?
That's pretty much an automatic number in the district.
In the Western District of Wisconsin, they just figure more than once a week, slightly more than once a week is
right.
called
and
for. Now, does the government pay for these things, or do you charge the person on who's being tested?
Don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. My guess is the government pays for it.
In some states, it's the person who's being tested who has to pay a fee every time one of these things is done, in which case I can certainly understand, if that were the case, why one mm-hmm. might find this an onerous condition.
The judge did, as I think defense counsel indicated, provide for the phase collection process, which phases down. You start out with two or three tests a week, and if there's a negative pattern established, then it phases down.
How much does it take to be a pattern?
I think that depends upon the individual. But I think the pattern, particularly in the case like this, can be established fairly quickly, and then it's phased down after that.
Is there any evidence to suggest that this test would pick up alcohol abuse, or is this a kind of chemical test that only picks up other controlled substances?
It's just a drug test, Your Honor.
It's just a drug test. He could be having, you know, two bottles of scotch a day, and this test would show nothing.
Well, I think with his alcohol...
If he had two bottles of scotch a day, he would not be able to arrive for his test. I believe the correct word would be deceased.
I think with the with his alcohol abuse on the record, that there would be, once he's out on supervision, supervised release alcohol testing, too. Just back on the initial first argument, the waiver argument is not a good argument, but it's not the best waiver argument, I guess, but... It just seems.
I must say, counsel, I don't understand your argument at all. You say that we lack jurisdiction because counsel waived something. Waiver? What is the relation between a waiver in the district court and the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals?
Maybe that wasn't put very well, Your Honor.
The answer is there's no relation whatever between those.
Right.
But I also don't understand why he had to say anything. What is your understanding of the significance of Rule 51A of the Rules of Criminal Procedure?
It requires the establishment of a record, and I don't think there was an establishment of a record.
What is your understanding of the significance of Rule 51A?
I'm not familiar with that right now, Your Honor.
Right. Well, that should have been your first answer rather than the second answer. Rule 51A says that exceptions in criminal cases are never required. An objection is what you make to your opponent's proposal before the district judge rules. That's required. Rule 51A says that an exception, which is standing up to the judge and says, I know you've ruled, but you're wrong, is never required in a criminal case. It sounds to me like your argument is that the defendant failed to make a sufficiently specific exception, because Judge Crabb had already ruled. And Rule 51A says exceptions are never required.
I understand. The second argument, then, Your Honor, is the question of the drug test. And that test is statutorily required. It does have, at the end of the statute, an exception which allows the court to provide some discretion for an individual that has a clean record and there are no problems.
And there's certainly, this is a wire fraud case. It's not as though he'd been convicted and pleaded guilty to distribution of marijuana or something.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, it's the same case, really, as United States versus Guy. Guy was a 1344 case, a bank fraud case, and there was a different standard of review in that case, but it essentially is the same case. And the court, again, and this is actually a stronger case than Guy, because here we had substance abuse. I mean, he's got a real alcohol problem. He had a number of OWIs, and I think the court, again, correctly just decided that the drug testing was appropriate. And again, he's not required to do 60. If he doesn't test out positive, then the phase collection process will kick in, and it'll be substantially less than that.
Is there any description anywhere in the probation service or anywhere of this phased collection process? It's reported in the briefs with all capital letters every time it's mentioned, which makes me think maybe I've missed reading something.
The only thing I have is that the phase collection process of the Administrative Office of Courts, it's a process under the Administrative Office of Courts, under this process, tests are conducted up to 3 times weekly with the frequency reduced as the defendant establishes a history of drug abstinence.
Okay.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Paul?
Nothing, Your Honor.
All right. Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.